step into the sin bin. This is Penalty Box Radio.
Three-time best sports blog winner.
With Justin Bradford.
Two-time toast of Music City best sports reporter.
And Glenn Blackwell. Brought to you by E610 Athletes. It's time to talk all things hockey in the Music City. Penalty Box Radio is on. Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, Josh Upton behind the glass. Boy, I love the hockey block here on the game.
I know. I do too.
I mean, when you want hockey talk, this is your destination for it.
It is. Tonight's the night.
We're just going to pat myself on the back here.
I know. On your flannel back?
On my flannel
back.
That matches
my flannel back.
So for those of you not in studio, which is all of you. Glenn and I decided on Wednesdays we wear plaid flannel.
Without realizing it, we walked in today and we have very, very, very similar shirts on.
Very similar shirts.
So you should go to Twitter and look because we tweeted it.
It's finally fall.
It is finally fall.
It's fall. It's fall like
flannel fall.
So notice this as well. Adam Vingan of The Athletic reports that Dan Hamhuis was placed on injured reserve. He took 3 shifts in the second period last night before exiting the game. So, Dan Hamhuis on the injury reserve. But that's why you carry 8 defensemen.
This is why. A lot of people always say, like, oh, I don't know. You want to do that? Yes, this is why. This is why you roll out 8 deep.
So now the question is, who's going to go in place? Because it looked like Tony Petitto was getting that opportunity. But now will Matt Irwin get a shot?
I don't know. This could go either way. That's the loaded question.
Well, that's why I was asking you, because I figured somebody might know.
I don't know.
Goodness.
I say that, you know, I agree with you. I think it's always been so many people want to see Petitto just, you know, go out there and blow it out. But I don't know. That's tricky.
So let's go ahead and get started with what happened to the Nashville Predators.
What did happen to the Nashville Predators?
The third period.
It
was the third period.
Yeah.
The third period happened, and it wasn't a good happening.
It wasn't a good happening,
and I know it's one of those things where you just get that feeling, especially after the Sharks tied it, that this is not good.
Yeah, when you go from 4-2 to 4-4, you're like, well.
And especially the frustrating part was how dominant the Nashville Predators were in the first and second period, and then they let off.
Have we seen this before?
Shocker. No, and it's frustrating to see because the way this team overall has played, yeah, they had the clunker against Calgary. Which clunkers happen.
Those happen.
And record-wise, points-wise, the best team in the league starting the season, which you don't always want to be that, but it's good to see the team playing so well because you know what they're capable of doing. And even during that time of being the best team in the league, they still have plenty of things to work on. Glenn, what's one of those things we'd like to see this team work on?
The small things, special teams.
Small things, right? Special
the
teams.
All the little things, end quote.
The special teams could be the death of the Nashville Predators. And I'm not, that's a hot take right there. But when I say the death of it is that there could be points left on the board, points left out on the ice just because of special teams errors.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, let's take a game, maybe they lose 4-3 and they've had, say they had 4 power play opportunities, didn't score on any of them.
Mm-hmm.
You don't expect them to score on every power play, but it'd be good if they're at least in the 20th
on some.
Percent. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where I want to ask you. Okay, so you look at the Nashville Predators last season on special teams.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So you still pretty much have the same team intact for the most part from last year. So what shifted? What's not working right? And how are they going to correct that? Because that is one of those things that... like you said, could end up making or breaking multiple games, but then you go to the end of the season and those few games that those had a negative effect on, that could cost you.
I mean, you can always go back and look at a loss or look at one game, and you don't really want to look at one game when it comes to seeding the playoffs or if we did this, we could have been here.
But a handful. Yeah.
And you start looking,
become a problem.
And you look at what you have as a sampling of games. So not one game in particular, but a sampling of games to where, well, if they'd just been a little bit better on the power play throughout the season, you can start nitpicking games of, well, they could have had an extra point here. They could have had 2 points here instead of one. They could have had 1 point here instead of zero.
And then all of a sudden you're 6 points and you're like, that could have made a difference.
Could have made a huge difference in the matchup that
because,
you have.
And you look at how close everyone ends the season, how close that's going to be anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 4 to 6 points could be huge.
Nashville Predators. 9.7% on the power play. Again, I always say it's early in the season, but...
But early in the season is when you need to work through those kinks and you need to start to nail that stuff down, because when you get to, you know, 15 games into the season or 20 games in the yep. season, those aren't corrected, that's when it's going to start becoming an issue, because you're 20 games in and you haven't figured out your stride yet.
You're absolutely correct in that. So power play percentage, the one team that's worse than the Nashville Predators on the power play, do you know which team that is?
I do not. There's one that's worse?
The Vegas Golden Knights, currently at 8.3%.
Okay.
So
they're not the worst right now.
So Nashville has had 3 power play goals. 3 out of 31. And you really want to point to a game, it's the Winnipeg game.
Yeah. Because that was huge. Nine of those.
Including 5-on-3s.
Yeah.
And I think the question was posed on Twitter as well, is if a team can't score on the 5-on-3, do they deserve to win? No, they really don't.
They don't.
Barry
yeah.
Trotz even said that before. If you can't score on the 5-on-3, you don't deserve to win the
game. He did. And that's true. Like, you can play great 5-on-5 hockey, which the Predators were
doing
last night.
Especially
you saw that last night. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, man, if you can't capitalize on a 5-on-3, then that's going to cost you in the end.
And for those of you that are still new, the reason why you should be able to capitalize, I know this is kind of dumbing it down for a lot of folks, there's open space.
Well,
that's what you need, is
open
space.
There's open space. There's less bodies that are in front of
there's
you
less
to block
sticks.
Those.
There's so many. All you have to, I know it's oversimplifying it, all you have to do in the 5-on-3 is move the puck around, and you're going to have an open
shot.
You're
going to find a spot. But that's what I get confused, too. And I get confused because sometimes it makes you wonder, you know, when teams like the Nashville Predators play better 5-on-5, it kind of makes me think of a scenario like Pekka, for instance. Mm-hmm. He likes to have tons of pucks coming out. He likes that. He doesn't want the here and there. He wants that fast traffic.
Fire away. So
it's like he almost sees better with all of that in front of him. And so it makes you wonder, I'm like, does the team kind of adopt that same thing where it's like when there's fewer people out there, they're like, I don't know. What do we do? It's easier when I've got 2 more people over here in front of me. So it's kind of baffling to me.
It
but
is.
It's something that needs to be handled, and it needs to be handled. It needs to be corrected soon.
Mm-hmm. And it can't just be point shots.
No.
Especially with a 5-on-3. And we're spending time on the power play, folks, because it needs
Well, it's
it.
Important.
It's important a strategy to fix, because when you're given opportunities, for instance, were the penalties deserved? For instance, the Victor Arvidsson one, was it deserved? No. That was a complete flop by the San Jose Sharks. But the Sharks took advantage of it.
Well, they did.
They took advantage of the opportunity given to them.
Let me say, though, that he made it seem like a big deal.
A big deal.
Because it was Vlasic. That was funny. Oh. Now, if Buck was here,
That's his favorite soundbite.
But I had to do it while he wasn't here so that, you know, my jokes could be appreciated. So,
well, see, Josh is laughing.
It was a big deal. Josh is laughing because Josh has a sense of humor.
Exactly. See?
Josh gets it.
See?
Me.
There we go.
But yeah, they did. And that's the thing. That's when, hey, he sold it and he took advantage of it.
Yeah.
And then they won the game because of it.
It's like in the movie The Mighty Ducks.
I know.
You sell it. Get indignant.
You sell it. Yeah, no.
Take the fall.
This is where it comes from. They all grew up watching this movie.
But if you're given the opportunity, you have to capitalize on it. And the Sharks did that. And that's the thing. I think more people are obviously addressing. People are obviously upset. I know Mike Fisher even tweeted about it because he showed the replay on Twitter.
Yeah.
About how it was a major whiff. And, I mean, based on the angle, I can't fault the official. I really can't, because
the speed
of the game, it looked like it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to get bad calls against them. Every team. The officials aren't out there for one single team. But if a bad call is made against you, then stop them.
Yeah. What the Predators need to learn from that is when you get an opportunity, take that opportunity and win the game.
You have opportunities to seal the game. You have opportunity to score more goals. Take advantage of it. I'm not saying, and people say, well, it's a lack of, they don't care. Of course they care.
Yeah.
If you're saying they don't care, then you're wrong.
Yeah.
They care. They obviously care. When things are happening like this, it all comes down to mental.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a mental game. The skill level's there. The talent's there. It's can they close on it? Can they make it happen? Can they evaluate the situation and then act on that? That's what it's about. It's not a matter of caring. You can tell when a player doesn't care. If they're
We've
shipping it in, like they're down 7-0, they're packing it in, they're ready for the next game.
Or in the middle of their shift, they just skate to the bench and stop the play.
Sergei Kostyuk. if something like that happens, okay. But it's not a lack of them caring. It's a lack of them executing what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to see just is puck movement. The whole point of moving the puck around is to create open shooting lanes and other passing lanes. So do more of that. So there's nothing wrong with passing the puck. People, well, they're just passing the puck. Well, you're supposed to pass the puck. But when you pass the puck and then make way too much time for having a decision to be made, then the goalie gets set.
Yep.
It's one-timers, you get to the slot, you get traffic in front of the net. I do not understand how somebody isn't planting their big fat behind in front of the goaltender. Sacrifice your body, make something happen on the power play. You score dirty goals. You get if you want to keep creating point shots, then go ahead and keep creating point shots. But somebody better be sticking their tuchus right in the crease so the goaltender can't see it, or they pick up the trash on a rebound and you score the goal. When the goaltender can see you line up for the shot, he's going to plant himself. It's the freaking NHL.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how
it works. And that's why a 2 to 3 second delay prepares him enough, and then you're not going to score.
He's set.
Yeah.
He's good to go. He's going to stop your shot. Sorry, that's the way the skill's there in this league.
And that's why they've got to work on that.
You have to make it a tough goal. You have to make sure you're sacrificing the body. You sacrifice it. Mm-hmm. Whoever is going to be, get in there and cause a little bit of a ruckus. Patrick Hornquist it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do that. Okay. A lot more hockey to talk. Up next, we're talking college hockey. You have Mike Corbett. He's the head coach of the University of Alabama in Huntsville. After that, we're going to talk a little bit of New Jersey Devils with Dan Rice of the Hockey Writers, because that's who the Predators play tomorrow in New Jersey. All that up next here in Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Radford, Glenn Blackwell, Josh Upton behind the glass. And now we're going to switch gears from ranting about a power play and moving on to college hockey now. Let's talk some college hockey. We have Mike Corbett. He's the head coach of the University of Alabama Huntsville Chargers. Coach, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing just fine, Coach. Thanks for joining us again. We always appreciate you coming on and joining us to talk some college hockey here. So let's go ahead and get started right into it now. I mean, you guys started on the road. What is it like, especially for this team, too, when you're continuing to build and you graduated some really good seniors as well, to start a team on the road before coming home? You guys just had a home series last weekend, another one coming up this weekend, too.
You know what? Going to Miami and the NCHC, our two road series were the NCHC schools, and that's kind of known as the best league that across the country. So it's always a challenge, and those are the first days we can actually skate, so when you play Miami, that was that Saturday-Sunday series, that's the first days we can actually skate officially with our team. So we have a few hours a week that you're able to try to prepare your team going in, but it's pretty fresh for everybody, a lot of meetings and not a lot of ice time as far as with your team. But so it's always a challenge. It's always a challenge to go in, especially into those buildings. That league is it's a very good league, and every team that league's kind of a gauntlet. So when you play Denver, Colorado College, and Miami going in to start your season, it makes it very difficult.
And Coach, there's such an importance on the mental bounce back, if you will, on the heels of a loss. So when you're preparing for an upcoming game, from a coach's perspective, what is your approach in communicating to the guys the mentality of, taking that loss, owning up to it, and then moving forward? What is your approach to them to looking forward to that next game?
You know what? A lot of it is just getting their attitude right, and obviously there's going to be some things. We typically play the same team back-to-back nights, so Friday, Saturday. So you can watch a little bit of video the next day and, cure some mistakes, make a few make a few adjustments in your game, and then it's kind of, a lot of it's just attitude, our biggest thing is with our guys is just getting them to understand the commitment of what it takes to be a Division I college hockey player, and that's, you have to remind guys that early in the year, because that's something that these kids kind of forget over the summertime and how hard it is to win. And so a lot of it is getting that commitment back and kind of that hunger back and making sure their attitude is right.
And looking more specifically at the upcoming matchup of Lake Superior, what is practice and the locker room looking like right now preparing against this team that's pretty evenly matched when you look at it, their history with the Chargers? It's usually a toe-to-toe matchup.
Yeah, you know what? Lake State is it? You know, they're a good team. They got a lot of. They kind of have a similar team to what we had last year. A lot of their juniors and seniors are guys that have put up a lot of points for them. So, you know, they have some skill, and it's going to be a fast game. And right now, our practices, you know what? Our practice this week has probably been our best week of practice. Unfortunately, when you don't start out well, you know, kids kind of look at it, and you got to show them exactly what those mistakes are. And now sometimes it takes them a while to actually understand of kind of what's, you know, what we need to do and learn the hard way. A little bit of tough love going on this week, but I think that our boys have really grasped it, and they kind of embraced it. And so it's probably been our best week of practice moving forward.
And again, this is Mike Corbett. He is the head coach of the University of Alabama Huntsville Hockey, the only D1 hockey program in the South. So highly, highly encourage you all to get down to Huntsville this weekend to check the games out there. And coach, only 3 goals scored by the team this season. Obviously some very tough opponents that you all have played. How do you motivate these guys to not grip their sticks too tight, for lack of a better cliche term like that, that offense will come? What's the encouraging part of saying, you know, just keep shooting, keep trying, and things will come? Is there anything different aside from that?
You know what? You guys talk to Peter all the time. Peter's a volume shooting team. The Preds mm-hmm. are a volume shooting team, and everything's going to the net no matter what's happening. I think that's kind of the approach that we've taken over the last few weeks. And a lot of it is it's not just around the net and on the rush and in zone offense and things like that. We got to defend less. And we kind of went into this week going into and we started it last week a little bit, you know, working on our defensive zone and our exits coming out of the zone, being able to get on the rush and those types of things where, hey, if we have the puck, they don't. Let's just keep it simple. And we didn't have the puck enough when we played the last few weekends. And so we want to defend less. We've spent so much energy defending our opponents. We haven't had a lot of energy going down in the rush. Certain games versus Denver and Colorado College, even though one of them was a 1-0 game, we had to get to the red line, dump it in, get off, because we had to spend so much time defending. So we really focused last week and for sure the first few days of this week of defending, getting on them quickly, being able to create turnovers so we can go on the offense and not necessarily have to spend a ton of time in our zone.
And the crease looks a little different this season as well. 3 goaltenders, Jake Toit, Mark Sinclair, Josh Astorino. Looks a little different from it has in the years past. What is the plan with goaltending to make sure is get all 3 of these guys time, or is it kind of a split between 2 of them and 1 being the third, or however much you can kind of dispel on the goaltending situation there?
Both guys, Jake and Mark, Jake's a grad transfer from Northeastern, so he's come in. He's got a little bit of experience playing and you know what, having been at a high-end program for 4 years, so he was looking for an opportunity to come and play. And Mark didn't have great numbers for us last year, but we always liked Mark. You know, Jordan Uhelski took the net last year for the most part, and Josh Astorino, you know, Josh pushes those guys. He's kind of I wouldn't say he's a third goalie. He's kind of, we have 1A, 1B, and a 2, So he pushes those guys, and he's just one that he just needs to mature and get stronger, and he's going to probably give himself a good opportunity to be able to push for playing time. But we have 2 guys right now, and Mark's been playing very well. You know, and I think we get into the WCHA season now. You got to see who's willing to take the net a little bit. We've given both guys each game the last 3 weeks, Each one of them have had success. Each one of them has struggled a little bit. So I think they're going to battle it out. Mark will probably play on Friday night. So then we'll and I'm not one to say, hey, one guy Friday, one guy Saturday. I would more give it to Mark on Friday and see how he does, and then sure, kind of make our decision Saturday morning.
And again, Mike Corbett, the head coach of the University of Alabama and Huntsville Chargers down there in Huntsville, Alabama, D1 hockey down there. And coach, we always like to take this opportunity to help educate people about college hockey, because it's such a fun and exciting experience to go to. So the WCHA, the Western Collegiate Hockey Association, is the conference that you all play in, and it spans the entire country all the way into Alaska. So it's very, very, very unique and interesting in terms of a conference for hockey. If someone that's never been to a game before, what's the style of play? What makes the WCHA different from maybe some of the other conferences in college hockey?
I think our you know, the biggest thing is the speed. The speed of our league is very good, and that's college hockey in general, and especially our league, it's a very much in-your-face league. There's not a lot of space. There's a lot of confrontation, and they're trying to eliminate the hits to the head, so the physical play isn't there, but there's always confrontation. And that's the biggest thing about our league. You come to a college game, especially when you come down to our place, it's going to be a good up and down game. You know, the speed of the game is what people love. It always brings people in, and that's just not our league. That's college hockey. That's where guys are. It gets them prepared to play in the NHL, and that's why there's more and more college players playing in the NHL, because the college game is so fast. And Justin, you've been there. Frantic at times. Sometimes it gets even frantic. And you know what? But that's college hockey, and you got a bunch of kids who are going 95 miles an hour. Sometimes they need to slow down, and sometimes they need to speed up. But it's always entertaining. It's up and down, and in our league, there's a lot of guys that can make plays. We always have five or six kids who go straight from our league to the NHL every year. So there's plenty of talent out on the ice, and it's exciting. And you know, it's for us, for this weekend, it's homecoming weekend. It's going to be a fun, exciting weekend.
And it's always fun to see a player or two graduate from the program and go straight to the AHL like Josh Kessner did last year with Toronto Marlies recovering from surgery. So it happens. You have players that play in these programs that go on to a pro career, and coach before I have to let you go too. It's always interesting, especially coaches that coach in minor leagues, that coach in junior leagues, that coach in college, that it's not just about preparing them for the games or anything like that too, but preparing them for their future career and their life after hockey as well. So what's kind of the process for you too in helping prepare these young men for their life after they're done with UAH?
I'm a big guy. I'm a believer in the game and sports teaches you lessons in life, and that's a lot of it, especially the adversity. Like, we're going through some adversity right now, and it's funny when you talk to our players, they think it's so hard because they have a test and then they have this, and I always have to tease them and say, hey, you know, you guys don't have a mortgage, you don't have to feed your kids, you don't have to do all those things that us adults have to do, and your life isn't that hard. And you know what? And you think it's hard now, it's only going to get harder. So, and it's funny, they just look at it within their own little box. And, you know, you kind of talk about those things and you say, guys, I'll trade with you right now any day of the week. I think most people will, to go back to college and be a college hockey player. I'll trade for them. You know, some of those tests, they're not that hard. We know that. But that's just the way they live. So I'm one of those big guys, especially when you fight through adversity. Some of the things that we go through right now, we're trying to score goals and we're trying to get our first win. You know what? Making them look at a little bit of the bigger picture. And it's always fun to be able to do that. And then they kind of say, okay, this stuff isn't that hard. And they kind of giggle. Everybody giggles about it when it's all said and done.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, as always, we really appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you this weekend.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Coach. That is Mike Corbett, the head coach of the University of Alabama in Huntsville, the Chargers down there in Huntsville. They play at Propst Arena in the Von Braun Center Friday at 7 p.m. and Saturday at 7 p.m. So if you're anywhere near there or come from Nashville, I know some of us from Penalty Box are heading down there Friday to catch the game against Lake Superior State. College hockey in the South. Go there to Huntsville.
It's a short drive.
It's a short drive, and it's a lot of fun, I promise you. Okay, up next, we're going to talk New Jersey Devils and NWHL with Dan Rice of the Hockey Writers here on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Justin Bradford, Glenn Blackwell, Josh Upton behind the glass, dropping the beats.
All the good jams.
All the good jams. All right. We're going to switch now back to the NHL from college hockey, and we're going to take a look at tomorrow night's opponent for the Nashville Predators, the New Jersey Devils. We have Dan Rice of the Hockey Writers joining us. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. So, Dan, it's really early in the season, but so far, and this is a very broad question here, what has been your view of the New Jersey Devils and how it's looking so far for them, of how they've actually begun the season?
Oh, obviously they got off to a good start, winning the first four in a row. Then they hit a little bit of a speed bump when the Avalanche came to town. A couple of injuries, too. They lost Travis Zajac that game. And they were actually ahead in the third period, 3-2, and then gave up three straight goals to the Avalanche, which they're one of the hottest teams in the league right now. So, then they went to Philly a couple of days later, and they got, as Coach Hines said, punched in the mouth. And so they're a little scuffling a little bit right now. A couple of more guys got injured. Ben Lovejoy, lower body injury. Steven Santini with a broken jaw. So they're a little thin on defense right now. And they had a couple of intense practices this week. So it'll be interesting to see. They haven't played since Saturday. So they should be well rested heading into tomorrow night.
And Dan, I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper into that. So they had the four straight wins. They blanked the Capitals and the Stars, and then they followed that up with the two losses in a row. So with that five-day break, it looks like the practices have been kind of intense. You know, there were a lot of battle drills, just kind of trying to get the team back to where they were. So what do you see, like, what do you see them capitalizing most on to try to redirect and get themselves back where they were when they match up against the Predators?
They have to get back to what they did, what made them most successful last season, and that's being relentless in all three zones. They capitalized a lot with their team speed against other teams, taking advantage of that, never giving up, you know, be it down by two goals or up by two goals. They kept the pressure up, and they kind of got away from that in the last two games, especially the Colorado game where they came out really flat after those, as you mentioned, the couple of shutouts that they had. You know, granted, some of those teams they caught on the second end of back-to-backs, and they knew, you know, you still have to take advantage of whatever the games are on your schedule. But, you know, it'll be interesting. Nashville's coming off of an off day, too, so it should be a pretty even matchup, and obviously one of the best teams in the West, so I'm sure they're interested to see where they stand against a team like that.
And Dan, there was a big question going into the season as to whether or not Taylor Hall and Nico Hischier would possibly be split up to kind of maybe generate more scoring chances down the line. But it looks like keeping them together for right now is kind of working. They're both, you know, generating some chances. They're picking up some assists. So what say you? What's your take on this pairing? You like them together?
Yeah, absolutely. I've written probably at least once or twice that they should be together forever. And Cotine's kind of laughed at me when I suggested that a couple of times, but you want them to stay together because they do have such good chemistry, and he even went as much as to say this week to one of the other reporters, he's not going to break them up to maybe spread the scoring out throughout the lineup. They just need more from other guys. Guys like Marcus Johansson, Pavel Zacha, those are kind of guys that they're looking for more production offensively out of, and you know, they've had their moments where they've gotten some goals from Blake Coleman, and Zajac had two goals in the opening game over in Sweden. Waiver wire pickup, Jean-Sebastien Dee, he has a couple of goals the last three or four games, and they're looking for more out of those guys to help balance that. So all the pressure isn't on that top line with Hischier and Hall and Kyle Palmieri, who's been off to a fantastic start.
Again, this is Dan Rice. He's with the Hockey Writers. Joining us talking about the New Jersey Devils and a little bit later the NWHL. So Glenn mentioned him, Nico Hischier, in his sophomore season, last year, great rookie season in 82 games, played all 82 games, 52 points. So a fantastic campaign, 4 points now in six games. It's really early, but what is the ceiling for Hischier? Does he have a ceiling? What are people expecting? What is the organization expecting out of him as he continues to progress and to get closer to his actual prime?
I think he could be a point-of-game player in this league. I mean, he's shown that he can score, and obviously having Taylor Hall on your wing helps a lot. You're going to generate a lot of points that way and a lot of scoring chances. I've been really impressed with his two-way game. He's very responsible defensively. He's very hard on himself, too, which is, you know, with younger players, you don't know how they're going to be when they come into the pros. And he's, you know, when he takes penalties or he makes bad plays, he's mad at himself. He's upset with himself. And he's even suggested that he should maybe sit out a shift or two. And the coaches, you know, they love stuff like that. They're obviously not going to sit him because they do want to see more production out of him. And they know he's one of the more offensively gifted players on the team. And I'm the first to admit I was Team Patrick going into that draft. And I think they made the right choice. And I think Nico, as he progresses, gets older, more mature, puts more muscle on his body, gets a little bit stronger. I don't know if he could be a Nathan MacKinnon type player, but he can be in that upper echelon of players in this league, especially with a guy like Taylor Hall on his wing, which, you know, they complement each other so well, and they think the game the same way, and Hall is always first to credit Nico for the success that he had last season.
Sure, I know, absolutely. That it's great to see Taylor Hall thriving with a team because he wasn't able to do much with his previous one because they didn't know how to manage him. But anyways, Brian Boyle, need to talk about him just because of everything that he's gone through, the way he's represented the New Jersey Devils. Today it breaks that his cancer is in remission as well. Just in terms of his leadership, what he provides, Masterton Award winner last year as well. I know this is an obvious question here, an obvious answer to this question, but how much does he mean to this organization and just to the fan base with everything that he's gone through?
It's huge. I mean, I've been around this team for a long time, and I've never seen the fan base rally around somebody so quickly that, I mean, he hadn't even played a game with the team, and he was diagnosed with this cancer, and the Boyle Strong signs and the jerseys and the reaction when he finally did score his first goal at home. It's just something that it's just one of those things. Being in the hockey community, you know how tightly knit everybody is and how everybody kind of rallies around each other. And he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He's huge. I mean, I've shaken his hand. I've lost my hand inside his hand because his hands are like the size of cinder blocks. And I'm 6'1", and I feel like a midget next to him because he's like 6'5" or something like that. And but he's just one of the most down-to-earth guys, very soft-spoken, team first always, and just the way that everybody rallied around them, especially the organization in that time of need. And on top of that, his kid was sick at the same time and with some serious stuff. And, you know, thankfully everybody's okay now. And as you said, Brian's doing great now. You know, and he's provided a little bit of offense too. He's not going to be a 20-goal scorer. He's not going to put up 50 points, but he'll give you the odd goal here and there. He'll give you the shootout goal every now and then. And as you guys know, a hockey team is made up of 23 players, and on any given night you need somebody to step up. And sometimes when the time calls for it, he's one of those guys.
Sure. No, he absolutely is. So it's a great story, and love seeing stories like that. So now, Dan, we'll have to let you go. I want to switch to the NWHL now. And they're the National Women's Hockey League, for those of you that don't know, it's in its fourth season. That began just a few weeks ago, and they added a new team, the Minnesota Whitecaps, a team that's been around but now just joined this league. For you, too, because you've been covering this league for a while as well, what does it mean to have this league expanding, especially going over to Minnesota, which calls themselves the state of hockey?
It's huge. I mean, they've sold out their first three games. The third game is coming up this Saturday. I expect the fourth game on Sunday to sell out as well. The fan support has been tremendous. It's a little bit of a challenge, obviously, with it being further away from the teams here in the Northeast. But they've worked it out where Minnesota is playing two-game series, whether it be at home or on the road. And, I mean, they have a pretty good team, too. They're not your average expansion team. They have a couple of Olympians that some people would know, Lee Steckline and Hannah Brandt, Kendall Coyne. To name, I think those are the three Olympians that they signed, and they have a lot of Gopher hockey alums. They have the reigning goaltender of the year and Mandy Levier, and they're 4-0 to start the season. They beat the Riveters, who are the defending champions, four straight times. So it'll be interesting this weekend when they play Buffalo, who's also undefeated. But they're obviously going to be a force to reckon with, and it's great for the league. It creates more job opportunities. That's 25 more jobs that are now available that weren't available last year. And I think the hope is that next year they'll expand again, and that just creates more opportunity for more women to play after their college careers are done. And for some of them, when they were growing up, this wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, you finish college, and if you're not on the Olympic team, that was it, or you go overseas and you play. And it just gives them more options to play closer to home, and I think that's what everybody wants.
No, it absolutely is. And last question before I have to let you go in your season preview for it. The Buffalo Buttes, obviously, they're the reigning champions, the Isabel Cup champions. They had a heck of an offseason with some big signings, one of them being Shannon Zabados as well. So let's go ahead and put a prediction out there. Do you think the Buffalo Buttes can repeat?
Well, they actually lost to the Riveters.
Riveters, my bad. I'm sorry, the 2017 Isabel Cup champions.
Buffalo won the year before, and then they've actually been in the final all 3 years. And
wow.
I expect them to be in the final again this year. As it stands now, I would have to say it's going to be Buffalo and Minnesota. And I've seen Minnesota twice. I've only seen Buffalo once. But I have to give the slight edge to Minnesota just because of the Olympians that they have, and Levier is – she's a money goaltender, and I would never bet against her. I know her pretty well. She might hit me if I did bet against her. she's got like ice water in her veins, and she's the consummate teammate too. Like, she gives up a goal, she doesn't blame anybody. If she doesn't play, she supports the other goalie. To me, Minnesota's, as strange as it is, being an expansion team, they're the team to beat right now.
Hey,
well, we've got it on record with you saying that she's going to win. So
we're going to tag her. Well, Dan, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much for your time and your insight on the Devils and the NWHL.
I appreciate you guys having me on. I'm sorry I missed the memo about not wearing plaid. I'm actually wearing a black hoodie. If I had known, I would have wore a plaid.
I know. Yeah, I swear. We can't invite you anywhere.
I'll try and get on that next time so we can all be coordinated, right?
Yes, indeed.
Don't drive me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
It's good chatting with you.
Folks, Dan Rice, the hockey writer. You can follow him on Twitter at @drdiablothw. And, you know, I got that wrong about the NWHL. I'm looking at it right on my computer screen here. It says 2017, and my brain must have flipped to think, oh, it must still be 2017.
So now it's about to be 2019.
I know.
Well, my brain kind of got shuffled around. Whenever you said it was a fourth season, I'm like, I feel like it was one season ago where we were watching the opening season. So I'm like, how is time going so quick?
Yeah, we went to Boston.
To Boston. Watch the game.
All right. So, great. Hey, we've talked college. We've talked pro. We've talked NWHL. We've talked everything.
All the hockeys. That's
all
what we like
hockey.
To do.
All things hockey.
All things hockey. Hockey's alive and well.
All right. Up next, we're going to answer all those questions from Twitter on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
If y'all don't mind us, we're just going to dance all
night.
Who's
going to jam?
It's a shame you can't see all of our sick moves.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only half white, but I dance like a full white.
Oh, you got it tonight, not me.
Man.
I have the jokes. You have the poor jokes.
Thanks.
The dad jokes, if you will.
Thanks.
Welcome
back to Penalty Box Radio. This is Justin Bradford. We got Glenn Blackwell. We have Josh Upton with the sound effects. Anyways, Glenn, did you know that there is high school hockey and it's very strong in Middle Tennessee?
I did not know this.
You didn't?
Please do tell, Justin.
Okay, so it's called GNASH.
Okay.
GNASH, if you really want to go there. But it is prep hockey, and it is alive and very, very well. I believe it's the 20th anniversary this season as well.
Wow.
Coming up. So it's huge. And so if you're looking for high school hockey to go watch, especially so many of you graduated from high school in this area too, go and support your alma mater. So let's see. Coming up on Monday, October 29th, there are 6 games. So Brentwood Academy, Frankfurt Academy, Lipscomb, Montgomery Bell Academy, Franklin and Hume Fog, Ravenwood, Page, Hendersonville, Station Camp, Beach, Independence, Mount Juliet, Pope John Paul II, CPA, all of them playing between Ford Ice Center and Centennial Sportsplex, starting at 5:30, and the last puck drops at 8:45. You go to there, you're going to see some high school hockey.
And a lot of it.
A lot of
That's
it.
That's fantastic.
It's fun. It really is a lot of fun because the students will show up and they'll chant and they'll cheer. And so I highly suggest that you go catch out some high school hockey in Middle Tennessee.
Yeah. Brings you back to being young. Takes me back to those days so long ago.
Takes me back to acne. Boy, it was like some expensive medication. Tell you what. All right. Let's get into the Q&A part of our radio show. This is from Canuck for Liberty. How impressive is Milwaukee's start right now? Boy, head coach Carl Taylor has got those boys rolling in Milwaukee. What a start for the Milwaukee Admirals. I know it's really early. I'll say that until we get to like the quarter mark. Yeah, thanks. First in the Central Division, they're 6-1-1. They have one regulation loss and one overtime loss, 13 points. They've scored 32 goals, which is tied for the most goals scored out of the entire AHL. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's very impressive. And I mean, it's not at all surprising because like we had talked with Coach very recently and he's got that fire and I think he's just passing that down to the guys and the guys have that fire and they're on a roll. And I mean, whether you're a Milwaukee Admirals fan or you're a Nashville Predators fan, you want to see that.
Yeah.
You want to see all that offensive energy. It's wild.
How about this guy? 11 points in 8 games, Rocco Grimaldi. He is making a case that basically if anyone goes down in Nashville, he is going to be the call-up.
Yeah, and he made that. He made his case. He made his name known here, you know, and the little bit of sampling that we all got to see in Nashville.
Yeah.
A lot of people jumped on his bandwagon immediately on the Grimaldi train.
4 goals,
so
7 assists.
If you weren't on it before, jump on it now, right after the show.
It's all right.
Because he's killing it.
Then Ellie Tolvanen, 1 goal, 5 assists. So it's temper things there, too, with people are freaking out. It's like, he's producing. Maybe it's not goals, but he's being a team player. And racking up assists is being a very good team player. It means you're finding other people on the ice. It means your vision is working, too.
And we were just talking with Dan Rice about that.
Yeah.
Nico Hischier and Taylor Hall, not really. I think they've got 1 goal apiece, but they're generating a lot of chances. They're racking up assists. They've each got, I think, a handful. So it's not always about scoring goals. And just like what Dan said, the team is made up of 23 people. Not everybody's going to be outstanding goal scorer. So,
all right. Next, this is from Preds Angry Fan. That's
Angry Fan.
Angry Fan. Is Fiala not playing well because Turris isn't playing well too, or is he sucking it up on his own? His Corsi 4 percentage looks bad for Turris, but the eye test screams Fiala.
I'll go with the hot take. It was the Turris. What was it? Whenever he came, the Turris effect.
The Turris effect.
Now it's over.
Well,
it's all his fault.
The funny thing is with this line as well, the second line, Craig Smith is a stats darling. I know George Mattarangas and Michael Way, they've talked about him before on penaltyboxradio.com with looking at the advanced analytics. Craig Smith is so far having a great season. He's doing everything he possibly can. Kevin Fiala looks really cold out there, and it's hard to tell why because he was generating opportunities before, and Peter Laviolette's even addressed it too, that he's liked what he's seen out of Kevin Fiala. It just, he can't seem to crack, and he's had chances. There was a, was it last night where he had a wide open right in front, a one-timer opportunity, and he missed.
Yeah.
You can't be doing that, bro.
No, you can't.
You just
have to hope that he finds his groove because everybody goes through, you know, all these players, everybody's going to go through weird times when they just can't quite get it right. And there's not really a reason why.
Sure.
You can't really point the finger at anybody, not even just him. It's just like, we just got to hope that he's going to come out of that and find
pushing.
His moment. Yeah.
Keep
you
shooting.
You have to.
Just keep shooting. Okay. This is Brandy, except every other letter is capitalized and then lowercase. on Twitter,
Brandy.
What do you think of Fisher's comments about video review for penalties? Do you think it could work or will ever happen? Look, if it's going to happen, I think it'll be for certain penalties where a coach could challenge it. And I think one of those, if you're going to look at one of those to challenge, it would be a high sticking because it's one of those things that I think could easily be embellished, which we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a review too, it could be a review for if it's a certain part of the body getting high sticked or if there's blood or something like that, it could be reviewed. Another one might be a delay of game. Could be reviewed as well to see if it, you know, went off another player stick instead of this the opposing team just flipping it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think
so
there's
kind of just situational.
Situational. That's
really,
why I don't think it's going to happen because there's not enough going wrong in the NHL for them to make a drastic change like that.
Yeah.
The only way I could see is if it's included as what could be challenged by a coach where it's certain types of penalties called because you can't just challenge every penalty.
Well, no, you can't. And in
like
that case,
so.
Yeah. In that case, then I think that it could work. I don't know that it ever will happen, though.
Right. No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Okay, this is from Goffman_D. The Twitterverse is complaining about the power play, which we were too. He said, but he thought it looked fantastic last night. What I'm concerned with is how our penalty kill was just thrown around like a ragdoll. Was that due to the Sharks' skill or the Preds' poor effort? I think it's a combination of things. The Sharks are extremely skilled, especially on their blue line. You have Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson on the power play.
It's going to be difficult.
It's going to be really difficult. And you can hate on Erik Karlsson all you want for winning Norris trophies as a defenseman.
And how pretty his hair is.
but you put him out there in an offensive situation. Oh, dude is deadly.
Yeah.
So that's – and you put them out there and they're against the penalty kill unit. And, yeah, of course, the Preds, especially if they're missing Dan Hamhuis.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge part of the penalty kill. And then another player, too, is serving suspensions. Austin Watson has been a huge part of the penalty kill in the past before, too. So I think right there could be some situations where it could be fixed depending on the personnel that's out there as well. But that's another one of those things. The Predators, I think, are ranked in the 20s in penalty kill.
Yeah.
So not good. Again, it's early. There's things they can fix. There's things they can work on. But that's all about getting your stick in lanes, getting your body in the way, you know, adjusting and making those adjustments. So that's what you want to see throughout the season. Are they making adjustments or not? Is the power play making adjustments or not? Or are they just trying the same thing over and over? And that's,
and expecting it to change.
And what's the definition of?
You are an idiot.
All right, here we go. AJS3677. What is our biggest need right now for continued success and to keep up the pace? A top six player, Gritty, top nine guy to help with the PK, or a D-man for the bottom pairing?
Yes, bring Gritty in. I don't even say a top six player. I don't say bring anybody in. I just say work on the special teams, get that right, because right now they're playing really good 5-on-5 hockey. So if you can correct that and you can figure out how to, I don't know, score a goal when it's 5-on-3, it's going to be fantastic.
If there was a piece I'd like to see, not saying they need it, because I do think they're obviously still capable of winning with what they have, as long as they execute, it would be a second line power forward.
Okay.
I say power forward because I want a bigger body. Mm-hmm. That can be physical but also score. Kind of like,
and he's going to go up to the net. Yeah. The dirty spots.
Yeah. Forsberg, but obviously not the kind of skill because the cost would be ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But that's what I'm looking for. It's a bigger bodied power forward that can score goals and also do some hitting as well, because the physicality is, I think, what's kind of could be missing on down the road. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we have got to get going. Thank you so much for tuning in. Everything you need, podcasts, videos, articles, all that stuff, penaltyboxradio.com. For producer Josh Upton, Glenn Blackwell, this is Justin Bradford. Thanks for tuning in to Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game.